everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Tom Fairbanks. Tom is engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, Inauguration Day in the United States, January 20th, 2017. Of course, the program is re-airing, so you might be listening to us on Saturday afternoon. We re-air the Buckmaster Friday edition on KVOI Saturday afternoon at 4. We are live Monday through Friday, AM 1030, KVOI, the Buckmaster Show. Wishes to thank some of our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Dylan Smith, who will be with us later in the hour, Inside Tucson Business, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun, that is so ably edited, those two papers, by Dan Scheer, who is seated with me in studio today. Dan, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you very much for your support. TucsonLifestyle.com, Southern Arizona News Examiner, and the Three Sonorans. Our Friday Focus interview, Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry. Mr. Huckleberry is with us and would be very happy to entertain your questions at 790-2040 on our live line. You can also follow us on Twitter at Buckmaster Show. And Facebook, well, we kind of maxed out, I guess, at 5,000 friends, which is wonderful. But occasionally folks drop off. I noticed for whatever reason, people come and go. So there is some spots for you if you'd like to join us on Facebook. Let's welcome now Chuck Huckleberry. Mr. Huckleberry, how are you?
Just fine, Bill. Glad to be here.
One of the items that the legislature has to do, and there's been talk up at the legislature about maybe putting to voters an increase in the gasoline tax, which has not gone up since the dark ages.
Since 1991, now about 26 years ago.
Yeah. So do you think people would go for something like that?
Well, I think people are really looking to try and solve transportation problems, you know, across all levels of government, whether it be capacity improvements and mobility at the state or local level, or I think more importantly right here at home, street repair and road repair. So I think, frankly, it's going to require revenues and require additional taxes. It's hard to say that word sometimes, but it's reality. And the sooner we, you know, achieve that understanding and do something, the better off our transportation system's going to be.
And this taking highway spending money in the state budget, this in the governor's budget proposal for the year that starts July 1st, the beginning of the fiscal year, it eliminates nearly $90 million in highway spending in the current year. That's money that's supposed to go to us, the people who drive on our roads in this state.
HERF revenue is entirely supposed to be spent on roads, and whether it's a local road or a state road or a county road. And to divert that money means that you're shorting the ability to make improvements in the highway system.
And then people complain about our roads being so bad.
And that's correct. And over just the last, we'll say 10 years, probably about $1.5 billion have been diverted from that fund statewide. And so it makes a big difference, particularly when you're operating on the margin. You haven't had a revenue increase in 25, 26 years to further compound the problem by taking money to balance the state's budget, money that's intended for transportation and street repair. It becomes very problematic.
Here's Dan Scheer.
A couple of questions about the sheriff's department. Chris Nanos is no longer sheriff, of course. Are there any plans or any talk at all to keep him with the county in one capacity or another? Second question is, with Mark Napier, he inherited quite a challenge in a $5 million deficit here with the budget. How is that going, ironing that out?
Well, the first question, I've just actually answered it in an email to the Star, and the answer is that Chris Nanos is not employed with the county. And there are no plans to employ Mr. Nanos. However, there are always openings in employment within the county, and in particular our merit system. And so anyone is able to fill out an application, go through a process, and they could become employed into the future.
No one would be blackballed. In other words, everyone is open to...
In our system, everyone has an equal opportunity to be employed. And they're not blackballed because they've been a former elected official. I'm very hopeful that working with the sheriff, the new sheriff, Mr. Napier, that we'll be able to help close that budget deficit. I've had some fairly productive discussions with him over those particular issues. I know that just recently he's already begun to address what we call the on-call problem with pay, and that will help. And so I will certainly fully cooperate with the new sheriff and try and assist him and bring that budget back in line so that we can properly budget for the department and look at ways to actually provide the money that's actually necessary to run the sheriff's department and nothing more.
And speaking of pay and compensation, Joel is on our live line, and I think he wants to talk about your particular salary, how you are compensated. Let's go to the live line. Tom, let's take Joel, please, okay? Okay, Joel, you are up to the plate. Tom, do we have him? Joel, are you there?
I am here.
Go ahead. You're with Mr. Huckleberry.
Yes, Mr. Huckleberry, I would like to ask you a question, and believe me, I have a lot of respect for you, and I'm not trying to be contentious, but I have read where the salary that you're getting now, which for most American workers seems like a fairly well-paid position, but I believe I read that you are also looking for a raise in that pay, and I'm curious as to why or what has occurred that you feel justifies the raise that you're seeking.
Okay, thank you, Joel.
Sure, Joel. My base pay right now is $288,000 a year, and I am employed by the board by contract, and my contract is good every 4 years, so every 4 years, it's up to the board whether I am reemployed by contract. My contract base pay probably about 2 to 3 terms ago was about $230,000. It has been increasing at about $35,000 per term, and that's every 4 years. In this particular term, my last one was $265,000. So if you add, you know, what the normal increase was, it would have been about 300. I basically indicated that I would be fully satisfied if my base pay increased from about 280,000 to 288. There's nothing magic about the numbers, but it's simply what I am compensated for. I am the longest serving county administrator in Arizona. And when you then look at competitive executive salaries, you can understand that, you know, it's probably pretty relevant. I clipped something out of the paper not too long ago, about 6 weeks ago, and that was the salaries of the University of Arizona coaches. I make less than the offensive line coach for the University of Arizona football team.
And you have how many employees, and what kind of a budget do you oversee?
We have about 7,000-plus employees and a budget of about $1.4 billion.
Okay. What about property taxes? I think Tom wants to ask about that. Tom, you are up to the plate. Go ahead. Hey, Tom.
Mr. Huckleberry, I own a $100,000 home in Tucson. Do you think my property taxes will go up a little or a lot this September?
Okay, Tom.
Well, Tom, if I could, if you're talking about the county, they're probably not going to go up at all. This last year, we were able to drop our property tax rate. So your county taxes more than likely went down. But we can't speak for the other taxing jurisdictions like the school districts.
How many jurisdictions are there?
There are 92 other property taxing jurisdictions in Pima County, and the County Board of Supervisors controls just 4 of them. So in all likelihood, what we're beginning to see is the tax base recover and expand. It's going to expand at about 3.3% this year. So what that means is there's much less pressure to actually increase the rates. So more than likely, I think your taxes will pretty much stay the same. We're trying to actually decrease them. We'd like to see them decrease substantially. One of the options we're looking at is trying to diverse our revenue base, but that requires legislative action. So I think the answer is basically they should stay the same or go down.
All right, Jim is next. Jim Kelly. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Mr. Huckleberry. Hey, I'm trying to figure out what's going on with this simpatico issue. Did we or did we not vote to tax ourselves some extra stuff to have treatment, mental health treatment, and substance abuse treatment on demand? And isn't simpatico a contractor to Pima County? Is there a clawback if they do not meet their legal obligations? And I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
Jim, what I think you're thinking about is the fact that we built a psychiatric facility and a psychiatric urgent care facility, mostly to assist those in acute medical and mental health crisis, and to assist law enforcement as well. That facility is built, operating, doing well. The county does not contract for mental health services. It's really a state contract that then we make available our facilities, because we all then have an intergovernmental agreement with the state. Typically, it used to be through the Arizona Health Department, that state agency. Now it's been shifted into what they call the Access Department, the Healthcare Cost Containment System. So we're kind of out of the mix. And so we certainly understand there's been some, in our view, serious issues with delivery of services for the mentally ill. We get involved peripherally because we provide the money through an intergovernmental agreement to the state. The state then contracts with the Regional Behavioral Health Authority. Our conversations are beginning to start now with the state to try and find out just exactly what's going on. And because on one hand, if you read the paper, everybody talks about more money available. But then when you look at the providers and you look at the users, it appears there's less money available. So there's something not jiving here. And so we're in the process of actually getting involved in it.
And Jim, you had a very quick follow-up, please.
I did. With regards to your four-year contract, Chuck, are you training the guy that's going to replace you? you've got to train somebody so they know what you know. You're one of the most intelligent county administrators in the country. So please train somebody and teach them what you know.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. We're training as we speak.
Let's take a break right here on our Friday Focus interview with Chuck Huckleberry. Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News, and appropriately enough, on Immigration Day, Inauguration Day, let's hear our bumper music from a group called America.
Chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road. Tell me, how long you gonna stay here, Joe? Some people say this town don't look good in snow.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday at noon on The Buckmaster Show, the Monday Political Face-Off features commentators Vince Robigo and John Munger. Plus, we preview the annual UA College of Science lecture series. This year, it's titled Rethinking Reality. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's Voice.
Sometimes late when things are real and people share the gift of
welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Chuck Huckleberry is here. Pima County Administrator Dan Scheer is with us as well, the editor of the Green Valley News and Sahrita Sun. Dan, you are up to the plate.
Thanks. Chuck, you have recommended the 4% increase to the sewer fee, and the 2016 financial plan calls for another 4% in January next year and then another 4% in 2019. Why so much?
Well, it's really trying to keep the system afloat in the sense that there aren't any huge increases down the road that if we continue to defer rates. In other words, this would be the first rate increase we've had now in 4 years. And historically, we had some fairly significant rate increases to rebuild the system. This is trying to make those rate increases more modest in the future. The advisory committee has just recommended one, and so my view is that the board is probably only going to consider one 4% increase and then see how it goes economically. A couple of things drive rates, and one of them is new connections. And new connection fee revenue has been down, and so it's really trying to gather as much money as you can to make a utility operate. And so if growth is down, connection fees are down, and then it just shifts the cost around. So this 4% is fine because it keeps the system basically all intact from a revenue perspective, an overlapping revenue and a debt service. And if connection fee revenues increase, perhaps that other 4% could be, you know, continued. So it's really trying to keep the system predictable and rates low.
And it's come up recently, again, I know a question that was raised a few years ago about the possibility of night meetings for the Board of Supervisors. What happened 4 years ago when this was brought up, and is it anything under consideration now?
Last time, and 4 years ago, I think Supervisor Miller brought up the issue about night meetings. The board asked me to basically do a report. There was obviously additional cost involved, and I think there was additional security concern simply because of the downtown area, and access basically to the hearing room is really through the downtown and through parking garages that not necessarily are patrolled. So there was additional concern over safety. And the board rejected the concept of having night meetings 4 years ago. My guess, this is nothing more than a rehash of a request or a consideration that has been, you know, basically rejected previously.
The Monsanto issue will come up before the board in about a month. I think it's February 17th, just offhand.
February 21st.
Oh, 21st. Can you give us the bottom line with this? Why is Monsanto here?
Well, I think, you know, what has happened in a lot of these discussions is that Monsanto's really not been able to give a presentation of, you know, what they're doing and why. And these five public meetings have allowed that presentation. So it's very clear now it's an enclosed, automated, fully automated greenhouse. The primary reason they're here is because of the quality of light in Pima County.
Not life, you said quality of light.
Light, yeah. Sunshine, yeah. Basically.
You normally don't hear that term,
You don't hear that. Yeah. And, you know, you hear us why we're the solar capital. Well, uh-huh. You know, it's duration of light and length of day. Well, the same thing is in agriculture, only they rate it as quality of light. Hmm. And there are only four places in the world where the light is of equal quality. And one of them is in Pima County. And a couple of the other places are in the Middle East. And so I think you understand why they're contemplating building the world's largest automated greenhouse on the property they've acquired. And that automated greenhouse will produce seed corn for farmers throughout the world.
Dan.
We wrote a story last week saying that the Pima Animal Care Center was going to stop identifying dogs up for adoption by breed because there are stigmas attached to certain breeds like pit bulls, and I understand that that decision has been delayed. But would not putting breeds on the kennel cards potentially leave the county open to lawsuits if, say, an animal attacks a child or somebody later on? Are those things being considered as you move forward with this?
I would say they would be considered, and I think one of the difficulties we have anymore is how do you really characterize a breed? You can sometimes characterize it by looks. But I think the true definition comes from a DNA test. And so you may be just as liable by trying to characterize a dog as, for example, not a pit bull, but if it has some traces of DNA in it, and later there's an incident and then there's a DNA test, now are you liable because you didn't disclose it? So it's, I think, you know, half a dozen of one and just different views. And so I don't know what the final decision is going to be. It's one of those things we'll talk to our Animal Care Advisory Committee about, talk to the Board of Health about, and try and, I think what the concept is trying to destigmatize adoptions.
But I think it's really trying to destigmatize pit bulls, really is what it amounts to, is that that I think the Pima Animal Care Center care so much about dogs that they're almost willing to err on the side of not giving information, where I guess in my business, more information is always better. And I completely understand where they're coming from, but I'm just saying that it raises some potential dangerous situations, perhaps.
And I think one of the things that we will do and make sure that a person who's adopting a dog clearly has the best information available from our staff and our experts in the field to try and disclose to that individual what the breed is, as opposed to it's almost like the old check the box issue years ago with people who had been in prison and filling out an employment application. They checked the box, well, the application went in the trash can. So I think it's maybe trying to get past that.
And the center will be breaking ground when?
Almost,
for the new facility.
Almost immediately. Contract has been awarded to Sunt last meeting, mm-hmm. All within budget. And so we're clear sailing for a new facility. Hopefully have it operational and open probably not completely done, but in December of this year.
And I've seen the plans. This is state of the art. The guy that actually did it, the firm that's involved, just really specializes in animal care centers, Chuck Huckleberry. This is designed with the animal's well-being in mind.
It is. It fully integrated medical systems within the facility, fully integrated systems that basically help stop the spread of disease. And so I think it is state of the art, and it was designed by the experts based on models of facilities that have been recently constructed.
Let's go to the live line. Carl, thank you for waiting. 790-2040. Carl, go ahead. You're with Chuck Huckleberry.
Yeah. On the question about having board meetings at night, basically, as I understood, the takeaway from that is that you're saying it's unsafe to go into Tucson at night, into downtown Tucson?
No, I didn't say that. I said it's obviously more difficult at night for people who haven't been there before to basically find their way to the hearing room.
That's not what I got. You were talking about security in the parking garages and so forth.
That's correct. At night, we provide additional security in our parking garages.
Okay. There's more security during the day than in the garage? Is that what you're saying?
There's just our normal contract security. At night, there would be additional security.
Okay. Carl, thanks for calling.
All right.
Coming up right now on 12:31, so the budget for Pima County, the negotiations, and I know all the department heads will start making their pitch before the board. That's only a couple of months away, isn't it?
It is. We're in the middle of it right now. I have weekly budget meetings, and it's not only to monitor the past budget, but it's to develop the future budget. I would anticipate releasing my budget for the following fiscal year to the board by about April 30th of this year, have it tentatively adopted, hopefully, sometime in May, and final adoption in June, and then we're off to the next fiscal year.
How does the spending plan look?
It looks pretty good. It looks pretty stable. No real threats that we know of for additional state cost transfers. We're trying to minimize those. The growth in assessed value, the 3.3%, is going to help with the rates. I don't think you'll see any significant rate increases, probably reductions. And so I think our budget is in fiscal position is very stable at this point in time.
And before you go, the last time you were with us, you shared with us that there would be in the pipeline several thousand jobs, high-paying jobs, that did come true. How does it look, that pipeline right now? Has it dried up, or is it still, is there some fluid? Is it moving?
The next 6 months should be. Probably not as productive as the last six, but just about. Okay. So we have several, you know, we're hoping to have one make an announcement before the end of this month. And so that's always helpful.
Yep.
I continue to see more activity with regard to relocations or expansions now. And that activity is continuing, and it's been the most active that it's been in the last 15 years.
We had Jim Cantrell of Vector Space Systems on the show yesterday, and he was talking about the synergy that is developing between Worldview, Vector, and Raytheon.
Absolutely. What is happening is that our buffer that we acquired to make sure we had compatible Raytheon adjacent companies is becoming a space center. And you see that with Vector, you see that with Worldview. We had a third one talk to us just a week ago, and they were mostly involved in what we would call national security issues, and decided that perhaps they were a little too close to the border and were looking elsewhere.
But they were looking because of what's happening with the others.
They wanted to actively use our spaceport.
All righty. We will leave it right there. Dan Scheer will stick around for our Friday roundtable. We're going to let Mr. Huckleberry go. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks
you
a
too.
Lot. All right. 12:34 on the Buckmaster Show. We'll have our Friday roundtable. Dylan Smith is going to come into the studio and join Dan and me, and we'll talk on our roundtable. But right now, how about, Tom, let's cue up some more America right now.
crush it if I can't feel it. Then how could it be? No magic could happen to me. And then I saw you, I couldn't believe it.
Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. You'll read stories from around the world ignored by the mainstream media. Stories from the Gatestone Institute, the Washington Free Beacon, the Washington Times News Service, and other great outlets. It is world news from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Experience the best of the Canadian Rocky Mountains with the rail journey on Rocky Mountaineer. You'll travel alongside the powerful Kicking Horse River and pass by monumental landmarks from the early days of the National Railway. On this legendary route, you'll see postcard images around each bend, including stays in picturesque Lake Louise, with scenic tours of Jasper National Park, and much more. Contact Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Rocky Mountaineer rail journey today. Bon Voyage Travel, your travel experts.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
The heat was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our bumper music, our intermission music on this inauguration day from America, appropriately enough. As we change administrations in this country, Dylan Smith joins us now. Dylan is the editor, publisher, founder of the TucsonSentinel.com. He's also the head of the, what is the name of the group? The Independent...
local independent online news publishers, which is a national association of people who run local independent websites like TucsonSentinel.com all over the country.
Okay. And Dan Scheer is here. Dan is the editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Just a brief observation about today being Inauguration Day. As I was watching our new president give his, I don't know, about a 20-minute speech, something like that, I was kind of monitoring Facebook, and man alive, lady alive, we live in parallel universes. Wow, said some of my friends. That was the greatest speech I have heard, inauguration speech. And then others
said, wow, what a dumpster fire.
I know.
And there's not really any, you know.
How is that possible?
Not too many people making a sober step back assessment, but that is the nature of social media, isn't it? Your immediate gut visceral reaction.
Same thing with some very nice posts, Dan, about the outgoing president and his family, everyone, the flattering ones, the greatest president we've ever had, wishing him well. On the other side, the worst, you know, president we've ever had. Don't let the door, you know what.
I think we've had a peak at the next 4 years.
Oh my goodness.
And it's going to be just like the last 4 months. So, you know, kind of brace yourself, and we'll see where it takes us. But, you know, Bill, as I tell people, he will sell more newspapers than she would have. So I guess I'm looking for my silver lining there, and we'll go forward. And you know what? You do have to focus on one thing that people have said, and that it was a peaceful transfer of power.
Yes.
And I'm grateful for that.
Well, look what's going on, you know, in Africa. In the Gambia, where you have a president who lost an election. He's been in power for 2 decades, and he's refusing to leave.
Yeah.
He's just kind of saying, well,
right?
Nah. Yeah. He acknowledges he lost the election, but he still says he's not going anywhere.
So the new president in the Gambia was sworn in at the Gambia Embassy in Dakar, Senegal, and then Senegalese troops crossed the border into the Gambia. This is just not a story you're hearing too much about in this country, but they're going to remove the guy.
It's looking that way. You know, you're talking a pretty small country. You know, the total of the army there is about 1,000 troops. You know, the president's bodyguard is actually about as big as the entire army.
And as I recall, the Gambia is there's a Gambia River, and that's kind of where it gets its name.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, you know, it's definitely a study in contrast to see what actually happens, you know, when you don't have a system in which people, you know, really place their belief more than whoever the individual is who is, you know, holding the very purposefully circumscribed reins of power at the moment.
Right. And Bill, I traveled to Nicaragua this past summer, and they were in the middle of a big election. Daniel Ortega, who's been in power there for much of the past 30 years, and a lot of those people had just given up. And I never want to see that in this country. And so I don't like the vitriol, the back and forth either. But I do think that one positive thing that's come out of the past year and a half is that more people are aware of how the system works and that they can have a say in it. And that's always going to be a positive thing.
Hey, Dan, update us on Rosemont. What's going on? We keep seeing some pieces in the Arizona Daily Star that the Army Corps is not really on board with the Rosemont proposal. What's going on at this point?
Well, stop me if you've heard this one before. Rosemont still needs two permits. One's the Clean Water Act, which is what you've been reading about that you mentioned. The other one's that record of decision from the Forest Service. And last summer, the LA office of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers recommended that Rosemont's permit be denied. And what you're seeing in the Star is the reasons why that they recommended that. Now, Rosemont has been very frustrated that they haven't really been able to get the Corps' attention and to try to address some of these things ahead of time. But any decision that is made, we in all of this, just remember two things. One is any decision that needs to be made, Rosemont can go back and make adjustments, so it's not going to be final. And number two is there was a very interesting conference call in November. It was financial analysts meeting with HUDBay executives. And one of the analysts suggested that, quote, we can forget about Rosemont for a while. And the CEO, Alan Hare of HUDBay, didn't address that comment directly, which in the context of the conversation indicates that Rosemont isn't planning any capital expenditures here for probably the next 2 years.
They're willing to sit.
And they're willing to, I think they're very committed to the project, but they also know that any hurdles they're going to have to go over are going to take a little while. So we're still, we're getting in some insight into the Army Corps and what their thoughts are, but is it insurmountable? Probably not. We'll see.
Given the timeline that the Rosemont project is looking at, that there wouldn't really be any chance for them to have any major investment in buying new equipment and starting to dig there in the next 2 years, would there be?
I don't think so.
It's not like they can get a stamp of approval in a couple of weeks and then just get out there and get to work. It's not like, you know, building a house in a subdivision.
But, of course, they've been talking to equipment manufacturers for literally years. And remember, we're now going on, 10 years that this thing has been proposed. And generally, you can get these things started a lot sooner than that. But there's been a lot of opposition. Is there a Trump factor? Probably not, but it's fun to talk about. But Rosemont, owned by Hudbay, is going to be patient, and we'll see what happens.
The previous owner had purchased a bunch of equipment and then sold it because they were, sitting on it.
Augusta Resource, yes.
Yeah. Dylan, one of your reporters, Paul Ingram, wrote at TucsonSentinel.com that 19 churches here, faith groups, have kind of pooled their collective resources to pledge to resist the Trump immigration policies. Is this reviving kind of what has been called the sanctuary movement?
That's certainly the intent. Intent. You've got almost 20 churches, synagogues, mosques, other kinds of faith groups in southern Arizona who have joined with hundreds, 600 or 700 organizations around the country saying that if push comes to shove when it comes to immigration deportation issues, that they will do what they did back in the 1980s, that what started here in Tucson with the sanctuary movement, and take people in and attempt to shelter them from deportation. And this includes some of the folks who were convicted of that back in the 1980s. John Fife, the former pastor of Southside Presbyterian, which is one of the churches that really has been at the forefront of this for decades now, was somebody who was convicted and put on probation, and he's part of what they see as a revival of that.
And being a sanctuary city, Tucson is not officially a sanctuary city, is it?
There are a lot of people who use that phrase describe Tucson. And no, Tucson is not a sanctuary city. Well, we haven't declared ourselves that. We have a couple of times the city council said we are an immigrant welcoming city, but used a whole lot of language that was more about the refugees and legal immigrants that we have in Tucson rather than people who are undocumented. There are plenty of other cities around the country that have said they are sanctuary cities. It's really kind of a fine legal line, and that's pretty much just a slogan. There's not a whole lot of legal meaning behind whether you are or are not.
Dan, the Air Force made the decision about the F-35. They're going to be doing that in Texas, where there's some training facilities that are associated with it. I don't really think a lot of we were one of the four finalists, but I don't think a lot of people put a lot of faith in that.
No, I don't think anybody expected that it was going to come here. I think a lot of people might be glad because they're pretty loud machines. So I don't think that was a surprise at all.
The budget, the governor's budget, the teachers were hearing that they are not happy with what some have called chump change in the governor's budget, which amounts, some figured it out, like 50 to 75 cents additional money for teachers.
Well, you're looking at about a $15 a month raise, over the course of a few years, and the proposed raise, if you just take that in isolation, does not even keep up with inflation. It's essentially no raise. There are other monies that are supposed to go to teachers, but we've seen that not be so reliable in how things have played out. And we're also looking at some things that probably should have been in that budget that were not. You've got
like
the
school mandated school maintenance.
Well, you've got that. You've got the state superintendent of public instruction pointing out that Ducey did not include in the budget the money to support the IT to actually get money to the school districts. You know, this money flows through the state agency and trickles down to the district.
She put out a news release saying she can't, unless that happens, she cannot, after July 1st, distribute that money.
Well, there needs to be somebody there to, you know, make sure that the money goes to the right people. It's not as if they, you know, set up some folding tables with sacks of cash and people walk in and just grab what they want. Somebody needs to keep an eye on that.
You know, Bill, down in Continental School District, which is a one-school school district, a K-8 school in Green Valley, and they have used a private donation to carve out two more classrooms within the, you know, existing walls. And I think a lot more schools are going to be doing that. They're not going to look to the state for the answer. They're going to look to private donations. And that is how they are able to do that.
Yeah, before we go, I know John is listening, one of our listeners. He sent me an email. Mr. Huckleberry had already left. John's not happy, Dylan, about sitting at red lights for up to 2 minutes at some intersection. He's just wondering, I guess every intersection has different timing for these lights?
Well,
is that your understanding?
The intersections are timed differently. You know, they're supposed to contribute to traffic flow, that so that once you do sit at a red light, that you shouldn't be hitting that many thereafter. The problem comes into, you know, which roads get prioritized, because everything can't be a priority, you know. And I don't, in my personal opinion, I don't think they quite really vary enough according to what the traffic flow might be. You would hope that we would have a sophisticated enough system that things would work differently during rush hour than they do in the middle of the night, but that's not really the case all that often. Of course, most lights around are not the responsibility of Pima County. I mean, if it's inside the city, that's the Tucson Department of Transportation.
State, right?
Exactly. And we have a lot of people who complain down in Green Valley, so I'm pretty much an expert at this.
Oh, so you've heard this complaint.
Oh, absolutely. But, and I'll tell you this, that the...
Maybe it was one of your readers.
Oh, probably. No. But the jurisdictions generally, it's a pretty easy thing for them to go out to the corner and watch. And they're very interested in making sure that the traffic flows and things are coordinated. And so, you know what? I'd call, find out who owns a traffic light. Yes. You do, by the way.
Yeah.
But who's in charge of actually setting the clock on that?
This is one of the things that's very easy for them to go out, figure out, and they would love to study it. I bet that's exactly what Mr. Huckleberry would have said.
All right, we're going to have to go. Thank you very much, Dylan. Hope you have a great weekend.
You
same
too.
To you, Dan.
And stay warm, everybody.
Yeah, thanks. My goodness. The big storm's coming. Wind watch or something. Wind advisory after 8 o'clock tonight.
Possibly 3 feet of snow and 60-mile-an-hour winds up in the mountains. It won't be that bad down here, but it's not going to be, you know, a sunny day.
Weekend watch is next. Be right back.
I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed.
The excitement is building for the grand opening in early 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in early 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For Weekend Watch, hosted by Inside Tucson business, food and beverage columnist Mr. Matt Russell, and presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour road trip, and a nice one at that, over to Silver City. So much to do over there. Do some antiquing in downtown historic Silver City. Great places to eat and recreation opportunities. Go to southwestnewmexico.org, spelled out, and the full listing of several dozen great places to stay and many, many things to do, recreation opportunities, on their fine website. Speaking of fine, a man always in search of a good meal. He finds some really fine meals. Matt Russell, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing great, but, you know, I'm hungry and I'm thirsty, but it is Friday,
always.
So it's the weekend, right?
Yeah, you're always hungry. How about a happy hour pick to get us off on the right note?
Right on, Bill. You know, as your listeners know, the big day arrived earlier this week with the opening of Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktails in St. Philip's Plaza, kind of a tribute to the heart and soul of New Orleans. So I say, how about happy hour there today, Big Easy style, with any one of their signature Southern cocktails. Now, for me, I'll take a Sazerac, of course, that classic whiskey cocktail, which was born in the 1800s in the old Roosevelt Hotel down in New Orleans. And I think I'll pair it with some fried green tomatoes and a cup of crawfish etouffee. Sazerac will be swinging today, Bill.
That sounds like a great choice. They're doing great things over there. How about a good pizza this weekend?
Yeah, you know, I love Renee's Organic Oven over there on Tancredi and Sabino Canyon. And this month, they're celebrating their 12th anniversary of providing Tucson kind of fresh expressions of purity, and that spirit weaves its way through really the entire menu, whether it's organic beef lasagna, free-range chicken ravioli, or, as you said, any one of their pizzas. I love the Thai curry pizza. It has earned a following in and of itself. Bill, this is real food served in a warm atmosphere, so I say go say happy 12th anniversary to Renee and her team and enjoy a great meal this week.
How about some farmers market opportunities?
Yeah, it's time to pucker up and celebrate the citrus season. Local oranges and grapefruits and lemons are flourishing, and on Sunday at Rialto Park, Heirloom Farmers Market is going to be celebrating with a citrus jubilee. All the fresh fruits are going to be there, chef demonstrations, a culinary convoy of food trucks. The rain will be long gone. All the festivities begin Sunday at 9 a.m.
What's in the column in Inside Tucson Business?
Well, Bill, you don't have to be an official cheesemonger to appreciate the hottest thing going on the cheese scene today. It's the cheese curd, and I break down the science and craft of coagulation in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
We will look for it. Stay dry, and have a great weekend.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
All right. This week on Liberty Watch, our friend Charles Heller will be talking about climate change with author Steve Gorham about the book The Mad, Mad World of Climatism. That's coming up on Liberty Watch at 12 o'clock. Charles on Sunday talks about the intricacies of the AR-15. So that's he'll have an expert talking about that. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for its content on behalf of all of our friends here at KVOI, especially on Friday, Mr. Tom Fairbanks, producing and engineering, Ray Allen, my producer-engineer during the week, the whole team here at KVOI, and of course, my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, making sure our podcasts are all up at a very timely fashion. Also, our music by the fine German composer, Christophan. Thank you, Christophan. There's a link at buckmastershow.com to his new album. On behalf of Tom and all of us at KVOI, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great weekend.